Names that still flattery.
Right, sure. Flattery, you'll get you. All right, so we're on Daf Zion on base. Am I right? Yeah, this is Haley's corner. I don't know if you know about Haley, but. What daf we on? Chesam and Beit. Just one second. Oh yeah, Chesam and Aleph actually. Chesam and Aleph. Now the thing about Chesam and Aleph here, Omar Rava, which is about three lines up from the bottom, is that we're really smack in the middle of a sugya here. It's like very difficult for me to come in and start with Omar Rava. I mean, if you don't backtrack a little, what's Omar Rava? This is like, somebody flew in from nowhere. So what's Omar Rava? Thank you, Omar Rava. Okay, so let's just go over what we know and try to understand what Rava is coming to accomplish. There's a double machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim about a legal, in both addressing two cases, both arguing and debating what to do in those two cases. Both cases are formal procedures in Beis Din, that take place in Beis Din. And in both cases, there's going to be an issue of what's called hirhur avera, which means that those who see what's going on, and in both cases we're dealing with a woman who's standing in judgment, in both cases there's a fear that nakedness could bring about hirhur, that people seeing it might be maharher. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that means. Does that mean they'll be mahar about this particular woman and they'll want to have some sort of relationship with this woman? Or does it mean that they'll be mahar about females in general? You see one female in the nude and then who knows what thoughts goes into your mind for other women? I'm not sure about that. So let's go through, just for a moment, the two cases about which we have a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. The first case is the case of a sota. And for that, we go back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah itself, I think, is on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. You see that? And we touched on this Mishnah a few weeks ago, if you remember. The Mishnah presents the procedure of Hashkas HaSota, of giving sota to drink from the Mei Merorim. And the Mishnah says, if you want to take a look for a moment back on the Zion, three lines up from the bottom, it says, Achu Megala Es Liba. And through this whole process in which they grab hold of her clothing and they unbraid her hair and so forth and so on, they expose her bosom. And that's the sheet of the Tanakhama. So the Chachamim say that we can expose her bosom. And this all has to do with the fact that she violated the kinui, and she did a stira. You follow what I mean by that, right? I don't have to go over that. And that itself puts her into a pretty suspicious category. I mean, she's not a tzaddikus for doing this. But Rabbi Yehuda is worried about this. He says that in certain cases, let's say in most cases, lo haya megalehu, he objected. And this has to do with the koach chachamim, meaning the authority that the Torah vests in the chachamim, that they could undermine and neutralize a Torah prescription, I mean a Torah mandate. They can only do that b'shevi altaseh, by the way. They can only do that in a passive state. For example, if Rosh Hashanah overlaps with Shabbos, then we don't take the shofar. We don't blow the shofar. The Torah says you have to blow the shofar. So the Rabbanan could say to us, we won't blow the shofar. Again, they have to have reasons why they do it. Say here, Rabbi Yehuda says, I have a pressing reason why I'm not going to fulfill the ritual the way the Torah prescribes it, by exposing her bosom, because we're afraid of hirhur. We're afraid that the people watching this could come to have a hirhur. And the Chachamim say, no, you know, she has to undergo this process, the Torah requires it, and we're not going to worry about her. So let's just make a note of it. Again, I'm talking to myself because I'm not really learning the Masechta, so I'm just jumping in. That if you're talking about a chashash of fear, a suspicion of hirhur, of having the wrong thoughts, then Rabbi Yehuda is very much on board. He's very much concerned, and the Chachamim say, "No, let's do the ritual as the Torah prescribes." The opposite, in terms of this debate, meaning they're going to jump ship, is going to happen in the case of what's called misas skila. Okay, then. So for that, we're going to have to mention a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Tana Kama about the case of a skila. So let me just...
Stoning.
Of stoning, right. Let me just go over the case. And that is...
83.
A brisa. And the brisa says that... if a person was condemned for skila, of course, as you know, is one of the four ways of implementing a capital punishment. And in this case, they actually have to remove the clothing of the person who's chayev skila. We have to understand why that's so. But in any event, they just have a small piece of material, in the case of a male, covering his privates. But according to the Tana Kama, and again we're going to see that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, according to the Tana Kama, Ein ha'isha niskelis aruma. We don't stone a woman by asking her to take off her clothes because of the chashash hirhu. We're afraid that people witnessing the execution of this woman would have the wrong thoughts. And yet Rabbi Yehuda says that if the din is that a ish niskal arom, then isha niskeles arom, aruma. And Rabbi Yehuda says that we have to do what we have to do. And if, again, we don't know why, but if within the context of mitzvah skila, because again, you know, putting a person to death is a mitzvah, you know, it's not just a juridic a decision of the court. That once the court finds the person guilty, then they have to be executed by the Beis Din in a certain way. There are many, many different legal requirements. And what the Gemara says is that we have this is before Rava, we're about to embark on Rava, but before Rava, the Gemara says we have a contradiction between two positions of Rabbi Yehuda. In the Mishnah in Sota, I'm going to ask you to give me a yes or no answer to the following question. Rabbi Yehuda is either yes, concerned about her, or no, he's not concerned about her. And what's the answer? Yes, he is concerned about her. So he's going to obviate the requirement and the ritual of legalosis liba, to expose her bosom, because of hirhur. And yet, in the case of skila, Rabbi Yehuda has no compunctions about the nakedness of a woman for the sake of skila, and he's not worried that this would evoke these thoughts of hirhur. So that's the stira between the two statements of Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabba, again, I'm still before Rava, Rabba comes up with the following answer, that there's a difference between the two cases. There's no contradiction. Why? Because Rabbi Yehuda's worried about a soto. What's going to happen after she drinks from the Mei Merarim?
She's either going to be alive or dead.
Correct, but she might be alive. So on the possibility that she might survive it, and the people have seen her naked, that's a real chashash hirhur. That chashash, that suspicion of hira, doesn't apply in the case of skila because
there's
no coming back. Right.
So why?
That's irreversible. So you know, you're not going to have. Again, there is such. Yeah, okay.
So in skila, if the woman's going to be killed anyway, why bother going through having her be undressed? She's going to die. Why?
Right.
Why
so that question I haven't answered yet. I'm going to come back to that. Believe me, there by the end of the shiur. So. Harold, you're going to have to keep me posted on this. But for whatever reason, in the normal application of the mitzvah of skila, we have to unclothe the person. In the case of a male, we're going to do that. In the case of a female, it's going to be machlokes. Rabbi Yehuda's going to say we're going to unclothe her, and he's not worried about hirur because she's going to die anyway. So again, I asked you at the outset, what is hirur? Is hirur because we're afraid that he'll want to have a sexual relationship with this woman that he sees naked? Or is hirur going to sort of trigger off some sort of bad thoughts that could impact on his relationship, his behavior with other women? What do you see from Rabbah? What are we afraid of?
It has an impact.
Well, what impact? Is it an impact because it might lead to a violation of an immoral relationship with this particular woman whose body was exposed, or because he sees the body of a woman, that's going to lead him to lewd thoughts about other women? Which one is it? No, it's this woman. How do I know it's this woman? Because the reason why Rabbi Yehuda is not afraid of lewd thoughts in the case of disrobing a woman for skila is because she's going to die anyway. But in the case of Sota, where she might survive, Rabbi Yehuda is very worried because the witness who unfortunately saw this woman disrobed, he has a tremendous inclination towards this woman.
But that's appertaining to this woman, Rabbi Yehuda.
Correct. Rabbi Yehuda is exclusively focused on hirhur be'isha hazos. Hazos meaning, what would this hirhur impact, not on his soul, so to speak, that we're not worried about, but what would it impact on his possible future moral relationship with this woman who's disrobed? And here he makes a logical distinction, says Rabbi, between the case of Sota, where she's going to survive, or she might survive. If things are good, she'll survive. As opposed to the case of Skila, where she's going to die. You and I would have said the distinction doesn't... I should say I, because I don't want to blame you for this. But I would never have come up with this idea. I would have said, seeing a woman naked, I don't want to even mention the word pornography, but you know what the power of pornography is. And pornography doesn't mean that if he sees a naked woman online, he's going to try to call her up and to get a date with her. That's not what, you know what I'm saying? So I think I'm even Yavin. Certain things I don't think, this is the part of Masechta Sota, you have to be very careful what you say. I'm sure Rabbi Moyes is excellent at this. I'm not so good at this because I'm not learning Sota, so I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say and what I'm not allowed to say, but I think you get the point. So finally, we're up to the Gemara that Rabbi Moyes asked me to teach today. Okay, so give me a minute, a little flack for this. Amar Rava, the Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda Kasha, the Rabbi Yehuda Lo Kasha. I don't get it, says Rava. With all due respect, Rava, you had a problem and you had a contradiction between two statements of Rabbi Yehuda. In Sota, Rabbi Yehuda was worried about Hirhur. In Skila, go ahead and do the ritual. But wait a second. There's a more fundamental question here. We're not interested in Rabbi Yehuda. He's the dissenting view. We want to know the opinion of the Chacham and the Rabbanan. You didn't even ask the question of the contradiction, or at least the apparent contradiction, between two statements of the Rabbanan. In the case of Sota, the Rabbanan said, go through the ritual as prescribed by the Torah. No chashash hirur. But in the case of Skila, the Rabbanan said, wait a minute, we can't let this go on. We cannot do what the Torah wants us to do in this case because it's going to have a terrible impact on the witnesses, on the spectators who are going to see this woman unclothed. So it's very interesting. Are you familiar with the phrase a rhetorical question? This is what you call a classic rhetorical question. It says Rava, the Kasha, you have a problem because of two statements that seem to be mutually exclusive in Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbana, Lo Kasha, and you're not willing to ask a Kasha on the Rabbana, the Rabbana. He says the following: Elam, Rava says you have to complete the picture over here. Dear Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda, Lo Kasha, Kiddush Hanina. Kiddush Hanina means exactly the way Rabbah answered it. That Rabbi Yehuda is worried about Sota because she might survive. He's not worried about Skila because she's going to die.
Which line are you on?
I'm now on the top line on Daf Ches Amid Beis. Okay, so it's, I don't know what you call it, 8B1 it says over here, if that helps anybody. 8B1.
Oh,
8B1.
No, you have the English pages there.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you have the Hebrew one, it should say Ches Amid Beis, but I don't know. Yeah, that's good. You have Ches Amid Beis. Very good. So, Harold, I see you and I have something in common. Neither of us own a Gemara Sota. It's just that you made a photocopy. I wasn't smart enough to do that.
Well,
so do me a favor. Next time you make a photocopy, make an extra copy for me.
Okay.
And we got a deal?
Yeah.
Drabbanan adrabbanan nami lo kasha says Rava, I can reconcile this contradiction between the two statements of Rabba. And how is that so? Hacha, here in the case of Sota, time am I the reason why the Chachamim are not afraid to expose this woman and humiliate her and have people watch when at least the top part of her body is exposed. And that is based on a principle which can derive from Yechezkel HaNavi, of all places, Yechezkel HaNavi. What did Yechezkel HaNavi tell us? So Mishum, because of the pasuk in Yechezkel, it says V'nivasru Kol HaNoshim. Now let's take a minute about V'nivasru. V'nivasru, the source or the root of this word, it's conjugated in an active verb, but in its source, the word is Yisurim. Now Yisurim could mean one of two things, and both meanings are very closely related. Yisurim could mean suffering, or Yisurim, very often in Tanakh, means words of rebuke. Like it says, Liyaser es bincha, you should always rebuke your son. I wish I had a Gemara Makkos. See, I would show you that the Gemara in Makkos uses a similar pasuk to this to prove that if a father rebukes his son, and again, I'm not going into the details here, so don't ask me questions, but as a result, he kills his son, not deliberately. But he was, you know, giving him a zetz. You know, we today live in, if a father hits his son today, my gosh, I don't know, there's going to be a lawsuit, they're going to lock him up for 20 years in prison. But back in the day, and I can tell you from my own children, they went to cheder here in Yerushalayim HaKodesh, they got a couple of zetzes. Especially one of my children who was quite wild, but they were all wild, whatever. Anyway, so the Gemara quotes a pasuk, and again, if I had a Gemara Makkos here, but I don't expect anyone to be nice enough to bring me a Gemara Makkos.
I don't want to miss anything.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Anyway, the Gemara Makkos quotes a pasuk. I think it's also in Mishlei. This one is in Yechezkel, but in Mishlei, I think it says...
The first book.
Your Makkos, volume 1, if I think there's only one volume of Makkos. Makkos is a very short Masechta. What happened over there? He's trying to find the Gemara Makkos. Okay.
Don't get someone to find
someone else on the job.
Right. So the Gemara there quotes a pasuk. I think it's in Mishlei. We'll take a look inside. And that pasuk also used the word yasreka. Again, the same adjective here. The same verb.
That was quick. So,
can you go back? What I missed?
Yeah, no, I didn't say anything. I was saying a few things about you that I didn't want you to hear.
Oh. I'm glad you said it behind my back. Anyway,
let's see if I could find this.
You want to move? You can move, can't you?
Well, somebody got it for us too.
Oh, beautiful. I found it. If anybody is interested, we're learning Daf Ches in Sota. This is Daf Ches in Makkos. And the Gemara says that Yotza Av HaMakkos Bino, if a father hits his son and inadvertently the son falls and dies, the father does not have to run to the Ir Miklat as normally an unintentional murderer does. And the Gemara says, because the father is involved in a mitzvah. So if you kill someone, like for example, a Shliach Bezdin, he gives 39 lashes and the guy dies. So the Shliach Bezdin who meets out the 30, he doesn't have to go to Golus because he's involved in a mitzvah. So to a father who inadvertently kills his son, he's involved in a mitzvah, and therefore he's parted from Golus. And the Gemara quotes a pasuk. Let me just make sure it's in Mishlei. Let me see if I'm right. Yaser bincha v'anichecha v'yitei madanim l'nafshecha. This whole pasuk of Shlomo Melech is praising a father who is miyaser es bincha. He beats up his son. Again, I'm using a very extreme word. What I mean to say is, in the context of rebuke, he gives him a zetz. I'm only quoting this Gemara to show you that the word Yasrecha, or Yaser Bimcha, Yaser, Yud Samach Reish, doesn't mean what we think it means. Yaser means suffering, right? Suffering, Yisurim, like the Gemara says, Yisurim Mechaprim, and so forth and so on. But here it means to rebuke. And a father is in charge of rebuking his son. Now, if in the context of rebuking his son, he accidentally kills his son, he doesn't have to go into the gulls because he was being Mekayim a mitzvah. Isn't there a phrase in English, don't spare the rod?
Yeah, spare the rod, spoil the child.
Yeah, spare the rod and spoil the child. That's a very Jewish concept. Again, yeah. I don't know today. You know, again, we live in a different contemporary society, so, you know, we might have to find a different way of getting our children to obey the law. But in theory, in ideal, there's a mitzvah not to spare the rod, but actually to use the rod. I don't mean the rod. You know, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, you heard of him? So he said that he loved his Cheder Rebbe when he was a child. Why? He says the Cheder Rebbe never had to hit anyone in the class. Why not? Because he took the rod, you know, he took the, what's it called in English, that thing that you...
The cane.
How do you spell that?
C-A-N-E.
C-A-N-E. He took the cane and he hung it up on the wall in the Cheder. And any time a child misbehaved, he would point to the cane. My father had a different thing. My father used to always go like this and start taking off his belt. But thank God I never got hit by his belt. My mother used to hit me with hangers, but that's...
That's coming out. The truth's coming out.
Okay, the truth is coming out. Okay. Anyway, so the Pasuk says, V'nivasru kol anoshim. Now, who are these women that are so guilty that Yechezkel HaNavi says they should be rebuked? And the answer is that this is a pasuk that alludes to improper moral behavior on the part of women, that women who are guilty of licentiousness or adultery or any of those kinds of immoral acts, then we should have to rebuke them. Oh, what does this have to do with the Chachamim? The Chachamim are in a bind. Halacha is all built on what we call Shnei Ksuv Mamachishim, Zetze, a conflict between two different, shall we say, ethical principles, that common conflict. Like, for example, how do you dance in front of a kallah who's not so attractive? I'm using an understatement.
Do you
say kallah nova chasuda, how beautiful she is? So this is machlok shri beisil beichame. Beichame says you have to be a man of truth, and truth can never bend. So you can't say about a woman that she's beautiful, even at her own wedding, because she's not beautiful. Beisil says, no. Our mitzvah is to make peace, harmony, and love between a husband and wife. And if that means that we have to override truth, that's... So all of... When I was a kid, they used to call this in college situational ethics. Have you ever heard that phrase?
Yeah.
If you take ethics in college, you'll know what I'm talking about. Situational ethics, where you have a conflict between two ethical principles. Right. Here's a case of situational ethics according to the Chachamim. On the one hand, we really want to go through a chastisement of this woman, even if it means that she will be humiliated. That's what the Torah is in favor of. On the other hand, we're afraid of hira avera. We don't want people to see this woman whose top of her body is exposed. So what do? Comes along the Chachamim, and they say that, you know what we have to do? We have a chiyuv of vinivasru. Vinivasru means our primary chiyuv that is going to trump. Oh, that's not a good word today. Okay, well, it depends if you have a favor of Palestinian state or not. But anyway, so... But we have to trump even the suspicion, the fear of people having hirhure avera, lewd thoughts. But hasam, in the case of sota, in other words, in the case of Sota, she deserves Yisurim, she deserves chastisement. Again, why did she violate Rabosai? She violated the Kinuy and she did Stira, and therefore, we don't have any right to have compassion on her. If this is the way the Torah describes that we have to humiliate this woman and take off part of her clothes as part of the ritual process of Hashkos Mesota, in order to have a drink for the Mei Merarim, we're going to have to have, we're not going to have any compassion on her. Even though, again, what are we, Yaakov, what are we now, what are we ignoring now? I mean, let's, you don't understand what I'm saying? What are we ignoring now? You know, you're putting all the emphasis on chastising her, on the pasuk v'nivasru, but you're ignoring the lewd thoughts that people might have, and that's the balance that the Chachamim have. But in the case, one second, but what about in the case of skila? There we don't have any vos. When you're putting someone to death, there's no need to give them chastisement. You know, we're not punishing them in the sense of we're warning you, you better straighten out your record. This is, as David said before, irreversible. This is the last, this is the last stop on the train. You know, you're about to be put to death. So again, let's just, Yaakov, I'll give you the floor in just 10 seconds. I'm just suggesting the following, that according to the Chachamim, says Rava, there's no contradiction. In certain cases, the Torah, as part of the process of bringing a person back to the fold, and emphasizing and impacting on them that they have to straighten out their act, and this is not proper behavior, and we want the people to know that you'll be chastised if you do these kinds of actions, because you're guilty of you're not a tzaddikus. You know, you had stira, you went into a private, you definitely violated the Issur Yichud, that's for sure. She's not allowed to be alone with this man. But moreover, she violated the Issur Yichud within the context of a marriage relationship when he told her, don't go into a private place. This woman comes under the pasuk of Vinivasru. And that Vinivasru is going to tell me that in the case of Sota, we're going to have to chastise her, and Ein Lecha Yisur Gadol Mizeh. This is the greatest way of Tochacha, that she is going to be exposed. But in the case of Skila, oh, we don't need chastisement. I mean, we're going to put this woman to death. Yeah, Yaakov.
No, just say deterrent to others.
I didn't hear.
Deterrence to others, what she's going through.
Correct. It could be, Yaakov is very right, that this process of Sota, which entails, according to the Chachamim, humiliating her, even at the expense of the possible loss of Hirur, you know, that we're going to... That is because of the spectators. We want to make an impact on those around. Where do we see Rabosai, if I want to bring a raya, a proof to what Yaakov is saying, that we want to use Sota as a method of impacting on the spectators, that they should be uplifted, that the parsha of Sota entails not just the testing of the Sota. Anybody know what
the
I have in mind?
You should be uplifted.
The Nazarite.
Excellent. What the next parsha in the Torah. I didn't know it was called the Nazarite. I thought it was called the Nazir, but Nazarite sounds good too. I mean, it sounds like it comes to another religion, but whatever whatever it is, we'll call it a Nazarite. This is the art school generation, so there's no such thing as a Nazir anymore. We're in Nazarite City. I thought it was a town up in the north, Nazarite City. Anyway, that's not Sarah. But he's right, David, 100% right. He's on target. The Gemara says that why did the Torah place the parsha of Nazir right after the parsha of Sota? Because the Nazir took a lesson. He was a spectator. He saw what they did to the Sota. And they humiliated her. And why? Because she got carried away. And what influenced her, apparently, we go back to Noach now, it's the drink. It's the booze. And today, by the way, there's a whole to-do. I don't know if you know what's going on in America, especially in Canada, about these so-called kiddushim. Are you with me?
What's a
kiddush? Kiddush means a kiddush after davening, kiddush, and sometimes it's during davening, and they have these clubs, and I was, they invited me to join one of these, and I was amazed. I mean, the amount of liquor and the money that was spent for a group of about, I would say, guessing about 25 men in a room in what I consider the largest synagogue in all of North America, I'm not sure if I'm right, I was just floored. I couldn't believe it. And they were drinking away. You know what? If you would ask me, I would say cannabis is a lot less dangerous than whiskey. Now, again, I'm not saying I don't want anyone to walk out of here and say, oh, we got to fire Rabbi Berzon because he's against whiskey drinking, right? We can't tolerate such a person.
You're not against it after that.
I'm worried about the young people. I'll tell you why, Harold. Yeah. Because whiskey is addictive. And the way that they do it is like, it's a show-offy kind of thing. Yeah. I'm going to spend more money than any of you guys on the whiskey at this kiddush.
I got a $500 bottle of whiskey. Yours is only $40.
And that's what it is. And not only that, you're going to drink two shots. I'm going to drink five shots. I'm going to show you that I'm still sober. It becomes a whole culture. So this is very dangerous. So the Nazir watches the Sota, and automatically it crosses his mind that maybe the intoxication is what led to this terrible situation. And how much more so if she was guilty as accused of adultery, John?
Yeah, with Skila, even though she's going to die, don't we want to, at least, or the person to do to shove her before they die? We say there's no rebuking.
Yeah.
Isn't there still a point of rebuking them?
You are right, but I think we're learning the pasuk in Yechezkel. The pasuk says, what's the word again? Vini Vasru. So the pasuk is indicating a mandate to the Bezdin of Vini Vasru. Now, in the case of a sota, she may survive, and therefore Vini Vasru has to be taken seriously. Why? Because we want to straighten her out so that when she gets back to society after she survives and she's guiltless, that she realizes what she did. You know, people shouldn't misunderstand here. You know, a lot of people think, well, if she survived the Memorarim, she must be a great tzaddikus. That's not so.
Yeah, but the whole process is humiliating enough anyway.
What do you say?
The whole process will be humiliating anyway.
So apparently if the process culminates with this, exposing her top body, that's the clincher. That's when she really gets the Vini Vasru. In the case of death, the death penalty, where there's no possibility of claiming innocence, the Vini Vasru is built into the punishment. We don't need more than this Vini Vasru. And Chazal tell us that when a person is about to be put to death, they are so overwhelmed, by the fear and the profound experience that they're about to go through. Again, I don't even want to think about it. Sometimes I think about the Holocaust and my mind just goes bazooties. I can't even put myself into that situation. You know what I'm talking about? I don't know if you ever had that experience. So how can you imagine what it's like to be taken out to death? That's Vini Vasru. I don't need any more Vini Vasru than that. That already includes, it swallows up everything. So therefore, if I'm not pressed by Vini Vasru, then I'm going to be pressed by the lewd thoughts that Chas V'Shalom, the Hira Avera. Then Hira Avera takes frontal stage. And therefore, for the sake of avoiding any possible Hira Avera, we're going to change the rules of the game a little bit, and we're going to end up with not disrobing this woman who's chayav skila. Now I'm going to make one more comment and then you'll kill me for this. The Gemara seems to assume that for the man who's chayav skila, all we need is a little teeny piece of cloth like the old Indians that used to picture in the westerns. I don't know Tarzan. Okay, Tarzan. That's enough. I don't know. Today's society, things are going so berserk that I don't know. Maybe we should be koshesh for hero, even if a man is naked. I don't know. But anyway, you can kill me for saying that. But I'm just wondering. V'chi teiman, if you'll say li'avid be'tarti, maybe John, this is your question, I don't know, that maybe in the case of a woman who is condemned to be executed because of her crime, we should do two things. We should humiliate her, and at the same time, we should put her to death. And again, if we go with Yaakov's approach, that we're talking about impacting on the people, or your approach, John, that we're talking about impacting on the person who's going to be put to death, that they should come to do a full tshuva. Either way, the Gemara thinks, li'avid by tarti. Okay, it's true that she's being put to death. I mean, that's the ultimate humiliation, that's the ultimate punishment that you could imagine, but maybe we should add another deterrent, another element into the equation, and that is the nakedness and the humiliation. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Bar Avua, Amar Krav Yahavto L'Recha Kamocha. Now, Rabbosai, we're about to learn one of the most mind-boggling pieces of Gemara in all of Shas. V'yahavta l'recha kamocha, love thy neighbor as thyself, would apply to any human being except for one category of human beings, those who are condemned to die because of their crimes. Nay. The Gemara says something amazing. That even a criminal of the worst crime, a capital crime, and even after he was condemned with all the details, there was Asra, and he violated Asra, he was warned that I don't care, I'm an Asken, this is called Matratz Mavisa, he said, ah. And he went ahead. He may have been a murderer. What could be more of a, I don't know what to call it, I mean, more of a criminal crime than murder? And we still have to love him. And therefore, says the Gemara, four words, which I'm going to wake you up in the middle of the night and see if you remember these four words. Barar lo misa yafa. When we put a person to death, we have to choose a favorable death. There's a separate halacha and dafka misas bezdin. At the lowest point of a person in terms of whether they deserve to live or not, they don't deserve to live. That's how low they got. And yet, there's a special halacha of Brarlo Misa Yafa. There's a whole sugya in Masechta Sanhedrin, which I didn't get to yet, but I remember it from my youth, about Misa Sayef. Mm-hmm. One of the four Misas is decapitated. And the Gemara wants to know how we should perform this mitzvah. Again, I use the word mitzvah because that's what it is, of Sayef. And the Gemara says, should we chop his head off from the back? Should we slice it from the top? Does he see? Does this? And the Gemara invokes the same. Maybe you could look up, perhaps they send you the Sanhedrin here, if you look in the Ein Mishpat. And the Gemara says, Barar lo misa yafa, v'yahavtal recha kamocha. And the Gemara goes back and forth. The Gemara says that if we chop off his head from the back, then it's terrible. It's this. It's that. You know. And the Gemara says, let's make this as quick and as painless as possible.
But the stoning is painful. That's most painful.
Rarlo misa yafa. Maybe John, what we're saying is that when a person is being put to death, we view him as a tzaddik. I don't know. I can't make sense out of this. But whatever it is, v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha.
What about
love thy neighbor as thyself?
Excuse me. What about stoning? We just said at the same time, it's the most painful way of.
Yes and no. What happens is that when you stone a person, the Chazal say that you build a coma. It's like a three floor I don't know what you call it, landing, and then you push him off that landing.
Sure.
And basically he dies immediately when he hits the bottom. Again, I'm not saying it's a beautiful, it's a pretty splatter kind of death, but it's almost immediate. And then they cover his body, he's already dead, with other stones, and they bury him with stones. But again, this is not my purpose. I just wanted to show you the amazing, again, if you have any halachic sensitivity and realize how just revolutionary the Gemara is over here, that v'ahavtal reich kamocha is not telling me how I treat you and how you treat me. You know, we're all tzaddikim here in the ELC, we're learning. But how do you treat a person who's condemned to death at the moment that we're putting him to death? Brar lo misa yafa.
Recognizing that it's so rare also, because the fact that only one in 70 years, and if in 70 years, then that is considered a murder's court.
Right.
But
right.
This whole
This is the Torah, sensitivity towards v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. It's mind-boggling. You know, if you've seen, again, I don't know, I shouldn't mention this, but if I have in mind a certain movie that I saw, which I still can't get out of my brain. I wish I'd never seen it. And the way they put a person to death, it was horrible.
Are you talking about Death Row?
No, I didn't see Death Row. I saw another brave movie by Maven Yovin, but in any event, it was horrible. They stretch him and they pull his body apart. It was terrible. There's no such thing in Allah.
No.
And you know, it's even the worst criminal. But Barar lo misa yafa. By the way, what parsha are we reading this Shabbos?
Bo.
Does anybody know where in Parshas Bo, one of the most famous commentaries, quotes this pasuk, v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha? In this week's parsha, right before the Yetzias Mitzrayim, God tells Moshe to command the people to borrow. Again, I don't know what the word, I'm using the word borrow because I don't know what the word she'ela means in this context. There's a whole sugi about that in the Gemara. Klei kesef and klei zov. the gold and silver vessels. These are the vessels that later on in the Midbar they're going to use to build the Mishkan. And the Pasuk says, Isha me'es reusa. Okay, if I had a
Chumash.
Oh, I have one. Look at that. Oh. A reusa. Now, who is reusa? Literally means your friend, your buddy. You know, women are better at this than men, because women have buddies, they have friendships. Men, I don't know, it's very hard, you know. You know, if you have one good friend, then you're in a separate category at a certain age. But women, you know, so the Torah says that the Jewish women should borrow kelim from reusa. Who is the reusa here?
Egyptians.
They're Egyptian women. Says Rabbeinu Bachai, one of the greatest commentaries on the Torah, that v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha includes even non-Jews. Huh. And how do I know it, says Rabbeinu Bachai? A pretty radical conclusion. You and I said v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha means, you know, reacha b'torah mitzvahs, you know, we have mishael l'tarik mitzvahs. Name. He says it includes a non-Jewish woman. I'll prove it to you, because the Torah uses the word reis on Parshas Bo, referring to the vitriols. So I'm just mentioning that because by sheer association, once I saw the pasuk v'ahavta l'reacha, I thought of this Rabbeinu Bachai in this week's parish.
But I have a major problem here. You're saying v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. You've just stripped a woman in public. You've just desecrated God's name. You've given her something to drink, and apparently it's the most horrific death in the world. But she doesn't even know if she's going to die. It's all sort of up there. So, I mean, what could be worse than that?
So wait a second. First of all, let's go slowly, Alan. I hear your kasha, but I want to just go slowly, so I appreciate your kasha. The Gemara itself is not talking about the Sota. Let's get the facts on the ground, and then we can see if we could, by analogy, extrapolate to the Sota. The Gemara is talking about someone who's chayav skila. And the Gemara says that there's no need, according to the Chachamim, to take this woman who has been condemned to the death of stoning and expose her body. We're not going to do that. Why? Because we have to l'recha kamoch. It's bad enough that she's going to be thrown off a cliff and she'll die immediately when she hits the ground. We don't have to add insult to injury and expose her. That's called v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, and based on that pasuk, Barlo Misa Yofa the Chachamim came to the conclusion that we will not expose her body; we'll just shove her off the roof.
So that's against Rabbi Yehuda,
and that's against Rabbi Yehuda. Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda is going to consider the impact, the fallout of lewd thoughts. Oh, now. Just one second. Did I get that straight? I'm sorry. Sometimes I get confused here because I think I switched the names here. Just one second. No, that's according to the Chacham, not Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that we will expose somebody. He's not worried about lewd thoughts because his understanding of lewd thoughts is vis-a-vis that specific woman whose nakedness you saw, and now she's being put to death. So don't confuse me with Rabbi Yehuda. We're talking about the Chacham now, Harold. Okay. Now comes along Alan. Alan's not happy. That's atypical, Alan. Usually you come into my class and you're very happy about everything I say. I'm being facetious. But anyway, Alan is not happy. Why isn't he happy? Because he says, let's, by analogy, talk about the Sota. Let's see if we can successfully apply the principle of Barlo Misa Yofa to the case of the Sota. Correct? So in the case of the Skila, you're saying, Barlo Misa Yofa, we're not going to expose her. In the case of the Sota, the Chachamim say, we have to expose her. Oh, so you're asking, what about Barlo Misa Yofa? So again, I would say the following.
And that's only...
Just one second, Alan. I have to work this out. You're asking a good question. I have to think about it. In the case of what? Of Skila... So we're going to say... Let me try this. How do they say, try to emphasize? See if you like it. No, I didn't think about this question. Again, I'm, I got this call from Rabbi Meyer. So in the case of Skila, the issue of... And the purpose of, or the agenda of, exposing the body of this, of the person who's chayav skila, again, whether it's a male or a female, is how we should implement the skila. What should be the body? How should the body be either dressed or undressed at the time of skila? That issue is inherent in skila. So if I tell you that according to the Chachamim, we're going to overlook, I'm looking for a better word, but we're going to suspend the requirement of nakedness, we're changing the very nature of the Misa of Skila, because the nakedness has to do with the body being thrown off the cliff without any clothes on that protect the body. That's the way Skila should be done. And now the Rabbanan are going to change the nature, they're going to alter the mitzvah of skila and the punishment itself. That's where we apply the principle, say the Chachamim of Yahavta, Brarlo Misa Yofeh. We're going to look for a way which is Yofeh. Not so in the case of Sota. In the case of Sota, the death penalty, if you want to call it that, again, it's a divine penalty, is the actual drinking from the Meimara. Whatever comes before that is part of what we call the Asreka, which means it's part of how to convey the message that this is improper behavior. It's all part of not the actual implementation of what could be Misa, if in fact she dies, but rather it's part of a process, call it an ethical process of impacting on her, on others, to make sure that they know that this repulsive behavior deserves chastisement and even humiliation. Here, the Chachamim will not apply the principle of Brolo Misiyofa. If the Torah decides how she's going to die, that's up to the Torah. You know, she's not going to survive this drinking and she'll die from it, her insides will be burnt up, whatever it is. But as far as the preliminary stages, all those actions that Beis Din is obligated to implement before the actual drinking, that's already a different story. That has nothing to do with the actual Misa. Here we don't apply the principle of Brarlo Misa Yofi Avta. Here the primary consideration and agenda, the purpose is the asreka, meaning let's, if necessary, humiliate the person because they did this low kind of sin. Let's send out the message, you know, blast out on what's it called, Facebook, you know, that this is not the way we should behave, and we're going to leave that the asreka as a separate mitzvah. So again, in the case of skila, the unclothing, right, the disrobing is part of the mitzvah of skila. That's the mitzvah that Beis Din has to mete out to implement Misa. In the case of the sota, the disrobing is not part of Hamisa at all. That's a requirement that has to do with, as I said, sending out the message and having an impact on her that if she survives this, she should straighten out her act. And here, we're going to apply the principle of V'yasreko, or as the Pasuk says, I keep forgetting the name of the word, V'nivasru, kol hanoshim, V'nivasru. Okay, Rabosa, I think we'll stop here. I don't know what time you have to go. I have to go. Yes. So I have to end it here.
Thank you very much.
And let's hope if we get together next time we don't have to talk about all these issues about Brar Lo Misiyofeh and disrobing and humiliation.
I would like
tomorrow.
Okay, so maybe by tomorrow I'll come up with something a little lighter. You know, this is a very, yeah, I didn't write the script, but something a little bit more pleasant, you know.
Tomorrow is Sota again.
I just remembered, David reminded me, I thought this was my, you know, Yatsasi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
How's what?
Your daughter doing?
Baruch Hashem. As far as I know, she's doing well.
I'll
send it to you. Not only.